This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You're tuned to the evening edition with Uma Pagan Ampiki Pagan and me, Caroline O. So the Ministry of Education has made various attempts to integrate technology into education. More recently, the ministry had announced that they're mulling over whether or not to introduce electronic gadgets into classrooms. Now, that includes tablets, laptops, smartphones, the likes. Now, unsurprisingly, this suggestion has prompted various responses, and some are in favor of it, while others are a little bit worried about the distraction that it could bring into classrooms, and also whether or not all students will have equal access to technology. But today, we're going to hear from another perspective. Our guest on the show this evening is Raj Ridvan Singh. He's the founder and CEO of the NGO Souls 24/7. Now, Souls runs educational programs to teach English and technology skills for free to fight poverty. So technology forms a central focus in their educational programs.
All right, Raj, could you give us a very quick overview on what Souls 24/7 does?
So Souls 24/7 is a humanitarian organization. We do very many things. We focus on four pillars: education, health, technology, and renewable energy. So it's a very diverse organization. We started as experts in the field of education, but it's been 17 years now, and like I said, we've expanded into three more fields.
All right. So I was under the impression that, I suppose, many of these fields that you focus on are tech-related. Why do you place so much emphasis on technology?
Well, for us, so a bit of history. So when we started 17 years ago, we wanted to help underprivileged communities get jobs, right? So our belief was to end poverty, you help people get jobs. And we realized that English was a skill that was low cost. It was easy. And if someone from any community would learn English, they would be guaranteed a job. And obviously, as you know, literacy of the 21st century, what we believe is now technology. Mm. So if you don't know how to use a computer in today's times, then you are as good as illiterate.
I think that's really interesting, though, what you just said, in that English just guarantees you a job. I mean, something went off in my head when he said that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But I'm curious, in teaching English, has technology played a role as well?
Most definitely. So traditionally, we taught with books, right? But we realized that with a physical teacher and books, again, you're dependent on the quality of the teacher and their willingness to travel, right? Poor communities are generally not accessible.
Correct.
Or easily accessible, and they live in environments that are not what you would say that the better teachers would like, right? They would all like to be in the bigger city. Mm. So what we've done is we've put technology together where we've built an app, we've built different systems, where we sort of have what we call blended learning. Because I think a very important point to realize is that technology in itself, so I was in San Francisco 2 years ago and I went to meet Coursera, right? Mm. So Coursera has developed the largest...
Like, they're the biggest online courseware, yeah.
Exactly. So they're not the biggest, but they have the highest quality, right? So they've got the MITs, the Harvard, Oxford, whatever. They're all on there and it's free. So I asked the program director that. I said, so from all of those who take, how many actually finish? And she said, well, about 10%.
Only
10%. I asked another question. From these 10% who finish, how many actually get certified? And she said, 1%.
What?
Right. So, and I was like, what is the issues? And obviously it's just simply down to discipline, right? I mean, when you're not pushed for something, when it's not like an exam where you need to go to the next grade or the next year in university.
Also, when you're not paying, $10,000 for a degree, right?
Correct.
Per year.
Correct. And also, just people don't prioritize it, right? When you think about it, even there's most people who take, months to finish a book, and very few can do it in days. So it's, again, just down to that focus, that need, that discipline. Whereas in a classroom setting, you have that, right? You know you have to go for class. We've been programmed such since we were, 3, 4 years old when we went to kindergarten or preschool. So what we do is what we think is the better way, which is called there's different definitions. So we call it blended learning, where you sort of blend the classroom together with the apps and you put that together. So, for example, exercises, we don't do it on paper anymore. We do it online. So, we have our apps which have machine learning, and they have this smart algorithm that sort of learns your pace. So, we'd save the teachers from homework, right? They love that. They don't have to mark homework. And also, it allows us, at wherever we are, to track how the students are doing. And for the very remote ones, to ensure a bit of quality, we are able to see the performance of the teachers. We're able to see how that goes. And yeah, so it's pretty exciting times, I think. I mean, I think online education, as much as it's been around, I think, 10 years, 15 years now, I think it's definitely growing.
So with Coursera's 10% finishing of courses and 1% of graduation, what are your numbers like?
We've only really launched it this year. Mm-hmm. We've got about almost 60% of our students finishing the programs. And only because we've only tested on a very specific pool, right? We're talking about orang asli youth. We're talking about underprivileged youth who generally drop out from programs at 60, 70% anyways.
Mm. Raj, tell me this. How remote have you gone? And has there been an issue getting technology out there infrastructure-wise?
Well, I've gone pretty remote. Lived in Cambodia for 7 years. As remote as locations that, I mean, forget electricity, you don't even have proper toilets.
Right.
You know, East Timor for 5 years, also been in very remote parts of the country. And also orang asli communities within Malaysia, you know, including Sabah. So I think the biggest challenge, firstly, I mean, beyond electricity, is actually transportation, right? How do you get these items up there when some of these places you have to hike, or you have trucks going through really bad roads and you can put your equipment in danger? Secondly is, of course, electricity, right?
You need to charge these things.
You need to charge these things. Generators are, so the fluctuation of the electricity in a generator is inconsistent. And this also affects the equipment over time. Like, we had computers, like literally power supplies blowing up in a couple of weeks of installing because the generator, the fluctuation of it, it depends on the consistency of the engine, right? And then in these rural areas, maintenance is a problem. So a whole bunch of things. I mean, there's a whole range of issues when we talk about accessibility. The good thing is laptops, the adapters, many people don't know this, but the laptop adapter, or the old ones especially, the big bulky ones, they used to actually regulate the electricity, and that helped. So we find old laptops to be pretty good for rural communities.
We're with Raj Ridvan Singh, founder and CEO of Souls 24/7. After this, find out how they're reviving old computers, you know, those that you think cannot be used anymore, and turning them into well-functioning ones for underprivileged communities. Stay tuned. It's Caroline O and Uma Pagan and PK Pagan on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is the Evening Edition, Caroline and Uma with you today. Now, we've been talking about Souls 24/7, that's an NGO that runs educational programs teaching English and IT skills as a solution to poverty. Our guest is Raj Ridvan Singh, founder and CEO of Souls 24/7. So it sounds as though you actually have to build an entire ecosystem to, you know, to get started to begin with. I mean, how is it funded?
So we have a number of different programs, right? So in terms of SaltStack, so we have a division called SaltStack, which we work with the Hong Leong Foundation, right? And we go around collecting computers from corporations, from agencies, from the public. And here's a very actually interesting fact, right? So it's, we have this thing called PHP, right? And it's not a programming language. It's called Poor Help Poor. So how this works for us, and all the, our geeky friends roll their eyes when they hear this, but never mind. So how this works is, so we go to, say, a company and say, do you have old computers, right, that are not, say, older than 10 years? We pick them up. We bring them to our academy in Segambut, and we have our orang asli underprivileged kids that are in our Solar Academy, and we get them to refurbish it. We're a Microsoft licensed refurbisher, so we put in proper licensing or open source because we're promoting open source quite a lot. It's free. It's low on viruses. And then we distribute this to underprivileged communities, orphanages, and stuff like that. So it has grown. And so here's something funny someone told me. So you've got Dell in the country. You've got all the big companies, right? Compaq, HP, whatever. And we've donated way more computers as a small social enterprise, which is almost 2,400 units right now, than all of them combined. And these are multi-billion dollar companies, right? So for me, it shows that you can find cheap ways, you can find simple ways to bring technology through the country. So that's what we've done with SolSTEC. And then on the other hand, we have another program that we've developed last year. So we're a Google education partner. And what this means is we want to bring the power of technology to the classroom, right? But how do you do this? But most importantly, first, why do we need to do this? Now, so technology gives us access to many, many resources that are well-developed, that are free, and that can let a student study at their own pace. So this is one of the exciting things about online learning, right? But the problem is most teachers don't know about these resources, right? They know the typical ones, maybe a simple Gmail or a simple WhatsApp or whatever, but they don't know about these thousands and tens of thousands of resources online which are free. For example, I'll give you Khan Academy, right? So almost $4 billion US has been donated, granted from Bill Gates to Mark Zuckerberg to whoever, to build this. This is to teach mathematics, right? To students of all levels. And it doesn't matter if English is your first language or not. They have in different languages. But, you know, whenever we meet a teacher and they always say, so what do your students struggle with? It's always either English, math, science, right? These are the typical subjects. And they have no idea that here's this resource, which is free, which if you tell a student, go practice and you ensure that they do, you sort of do some kind of offline monitoring. It saves you all the trouble from you having to do after school classes.
So there is, on one hand, teaching the students how to use all these resources. Mm-hmm. But surely you have to teach all the teachers to do it too, right?
Exactly. So that's what we do, because there's this thing called the Google Certified Educator. And they've come up with this great program where they certify the teachers. They give them certificates. I mean, whatever we want to say, mostly most people in the world, they're certificate driven. So Google's like, hey, we're going to give you a beautiful certificate. We're going to send a letter to your headmaster saying you've graduated. And this is part of their program. Mm. And then they teach you all these. I mean, there are so many apps even within Google that most people don't know about, right? Things that you can do. There's this thing called Classroom. You can actually manage your classroom, and it's all for free, right? You can do slides, docs, sheets. Everything is for free. You can manage even your homework. And it's not difficult, and it's not heavyweight, meaning it's low bandwidth. It's been well-developed. It's just that many, many public school teachers are unaware about it, and that's what we're trying to change in the country.
Right. And are you actually actively going out and talking to public school teachers? I mean, what kind of engagement do you have there?
Yeah, so we've started a pilot project earlier this year with a group. Well, it's called the Malaysian Collective Initiative in a group of schools in Klang. We train the public school teachers just to see, hey, does our program work, right? Because we're not just doing exclusively Google. We're also teaching them these various online resources. And it has been really, really successful. I mean, we taught 17 public school teachers. And within that, it's a 24-hour course over 4 weekends, so 6 hours a Saturday. And within that period itself, 3 of them already created like simple websites for their school.
Wow.
Putting up schedules, putting up information for parents to see. Mm. And these are schools in Klang, you know. So these are the kind of things. Second, you know, just simple things like Google Drive. I mean, teachers still go around with USB sticks. I mean, who does that, you know? And because that's what they've learned all these years. And he was like, hey, you can share this. This is Google Drive is there, Dropbox is there. It's a whole bunch of different things. And it actually makes it even more convenient. And it's virus-free because within their systems, they detect viruses, right?
You know what? I think it's pretty interesting because we talk about this quite a bit. Is in getting teachers up to speed when it comes to technology, and how can they possibly, when new things are being invented every day? But I guess we forget that you don't really have to reinvent the wheel. There's so many things out there, you just don't know.
People
about
have it. Done already, yeah. Right? Just hearing you talk about this, Raj, what's interesting for me is, of course, it would also invite collaboration between schools, and something that we don't see between teachers of, you know, we know teachers from schools meet, but then they'll only meet at some pesta once in a while.
Right.
But, you know, if you use Google Drive, I mean, sharing syllabus, sharing notes, performance details, that would be an incredible collaborative tool, right?
Exactly. And for us, that's the most exciting thing about creating. So we have this thing called the educator groups, right? So anyone who's gone through our training gets to be part of this group, which gets access to these hundreds of resources. So we make it easy for teachers, right? You just, if you're looking for science you just click this, here's the website, right? Because we realize with teachers, with the amount of work that they've already been bogged down with the new KPIs every 6 months, blueprints, whatever.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, obviously it's easy for us to blame teachers and say, oh, they're this and they're that. But the truth of the matter is there's a lot of different programs that people are trying to get to upskill them. And the beautiful thing about the educators group is they get to collaborate. So they get to share, like, oh, I made this slides teaching geography. And it's there. Anyone can use it, right? And other teachers can get inspiration from it. I think the beautiful thing about technology is the fact that if you don't know something, you have no idea, all you can do is do a Google search, see what's out there, and get a matter of perspective. And I think this is one of the biggest challenges that we always talk about public school teachers or public school students, right? They don't have as much a perspective as, say, private schools or international schools. And all that can be very easily transformed if people are taught the tips and tricks of how to use the different online resources. You know, I mean, even within Google, right, it's not as simple as just typing. If you teach them simple tricks, how to put certain commands within the search bar, you get a whole different world, you know.
With us this evening is Raj Ridvan Singh, founder and CEO of Souls 24/7. We've got the news coming up in just a little bit, but after that, we'll be talking about the implementation of these ideas on a larger scale beyond just one organization. So stay tuned. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Caroline and Uma. Now, today we're talking about Souls 24/7. That's a humanitarian organization which focuses on providing programs that teach English and IT skills to fight poverty. Now, so far, Souls have trained more than 30,000 students. Our guest is Raj Ridvan Singh, founder and CEO of Souls 24/7.
We've kind of outlined a very interesting scenario in that you've got math, science, English.
Mm-hmm. Teachers, students.
You're also using, you don't need cutting-edge technology for it.
Nope.
So the entry point is really, really low.
Yep, 10-year-old laptops.
So tell me this, why isn't this everywhere?
Well, maybe because many donors don't know about us.
No, but why haven't the government jumped on board? Why haven't private organizations jumped on board?
Wow. This could get controversial. Well, I think so the government, you know, a number of years ago had this fantastic initiative called the One Bistari Net.
Correct.
Right? I think one thing I must say, the government of Malaysia knows the power of technology. I mean, for more than 15, 20 years, right? Right from the whole MSC thing, the multimedia super corridor, blah, blah, blah. But I think just like what people always say, you know, we have great ideas, great vision, but the implementation is really where we struggle. Now, what are the challenges? So when and this is again public knowledge. If you look at the Attorney General's report, right? So we're supposed to have every school connected, and we're supposed to have computers.
Yes.
Right? This was done, whatever. But if you look at the Attorney General's report, you had a 0.4 to a less than 4% penetration rate on the One Bistari Net, right? So this is like, so you've got the network and all that.
But no one's using it.
No one's using it. So then you analyze, okay, why? Because it's the internet, right? Then you find out that they were given very, very low bandwidth. I mean, the teachers were given like something like 250 megabytes. And all this is in the Attorney General's report. Nothing that I'm saying that's new. To 1 gig per school. I'm like, that is ridiculous, right? Whoa. I mean, Maxis is now giving you 60 gigs on your phone, right?
Yeah.
And that's just you. Uh-huh. And then you have the lack of training, right? Because they don't even know. We've been with public school teachers in urban settings. Let's forget rural. Even in urban settings, they don't even know how to use the computer. And they're afraid because if something goes wrong,
correct,
they get into trouble. And the fear of breaking the machine or getting into trouble with the headmaster paralyzes them. So there are a number of factors. And then finally, I think the biggest challenge is how do you squeeze all this with all the KPIs, with all the extracurricular activities, with all the programs that we keep trying to put in our public schools?
Right. Well, it certainly sounds like quite a conundrum. Can I just ask you, and we like to do these hypotheticals, so if you were in the Ministry of Education with the authority to change three major things, what would they be?
The first thing I would do is I would put computers with proper bandwidth in every school, and obviously starting with urban and moving to semi-urban and rural. Second, I would ensure that, firstly, all the teachers that are in the teacher training before they go have very thorough IT training on technology. And this is simple, like Google programs, various programs. Give them the resources.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's 6 hours over 4 weekends.
Yes, exactly. It's 24 hours, right? It's not a lot of time. And the third thing that I would do really is sort of to raise awareness amongst parents with students on the available resources, because you have a lot of parents who are motivated, who really want to train their kids, who really want their kids to get the best possible education, but they don't know about these resources, right? Many, many parents don't know that you don't actually have to send your child for tuition. You can actually go to these online resources, get top quality education for free. All you have to pay for is the bandwidth, which is very likely you already have it at home, or you could go to an internet cafe and pay ₱1 because it's really that cheap. Two, if you're in a rural area, there are already, what, over 300-400, I think, Pusat Internet Satu Malaysia, which is there. Again, they can use that. So I think one thing good is that the infrastructure when it comes to technology, I think in rural areas, is there compared to countries like where I work with in Cambodia or East Timor, where, I mean, Wi-Fi is a luxury.
Well, the government pulled that off very well because they give themselves a year essentially in the budget to get Unify everywhere, right? To get broadband everywhere, and they achieved that KPI.
I don't know. About
no?
That. I don't know.
At least in Peninsula, right?
I don't know, man.
Oh, well, really?
Well, I don't think it was Unify. I think One Best Story was through the Yes's network.
Yes, it was.
Best Story was through Yes, but I think the broadband project was to try and get broadband all across Malaysia as quickly as possible, right? Yes. High-speed broadband.
I think try is the key word here.
Well, what we do know is that, you know, with the three wishes, if you were someone in authority in the Ministry of Education, you managed to hit all stakeholders, right?
I know. Look at that. That's good job. Well done. Teachers, parents, and government. Raj, you've been clearly doing this a long time.
I have.
So tell me what's next with regards to subject matter and what you guys are going to do. So math, science, and English is there. I mean, coding.
Yeah. I mean, no. I mean, we see the need in math, science, and English because this is what teachers regularly come up to us and say. But the resources are for every subject: history, geography. I mean, biology, physics.
And it's all localized, right?
Yes and no, right? The thing about learning is, it doesn't have to be localized, right? It never really is. You don't have to keep translating everything. There are also translating options available. But most importantly, it's available, you know. And I think that's the biggest challenge. People don't know that, you know, like hey, it's there. There's these resources on any subject matter, as complicated as you want to imagine. It's there.
When we talk about using the internet, using technology, it's about context, right? And that's what you're going to have to learn if you're online. With all the resources, it's about aggregation. It's about finding that context for yourself. So I don't know where localization fits in, really.
No, that's true. That's so true. But again, you know, for some communities, it helps. It definitely does. I don't see the need to overdo it, which is what we always try to do. Everything we have to translate, because even countries like China and Russia don't do that anymore. They get their people to learn the international business language, which is English, or the language of innovation and technology, which is in English, and they let the people go and do the research. There are websites out there that have localized. For example, EduNation, they give a lot of good videos showing some good practices around there. And there are many other websites, actually, that are out there doing stuff in Bahasa Malaysia, for example.
Before we let you go, what's your next big project?
A number of them. We're running the national program for English called Bahasa Inggeris Satu Malaysia. So we're busy on that, trying to bring English throughout the country for the rakyat with partnership with the Ministry of Finance. For me, in terms of technology, is I just have to figure out how am I going to get to that 500,000 teachers and 14 million students, right? And that's our population, our school-going population.
500,000 teachers in how many?
And 14 million students. That's our school-going population.
Wow, right.
I thought maybe it's 549,000. I mean, it's a lot of teachers. And how to be able to train that. I mean, the models are simple. So I hope that we get to work with the ministry, because they actually do have a Department of Technology, and technically every school is supposed to have a technology officer. And there's this thing called Bahagian Technology Pendidikan, BTP. Just trying to reach out and see how we can really support and help them throughout the country and reach. Because at the end of the day, it is so important to bring technology to the classroom. But again, it has to be managed properly. I mean, there's all kinds of limitations as well. Let's not forget that, right? It's also a very dangerous world if it's not well managed or if it's not well monitored. So again, I mean, I did the, I think when they called me in a couple of months ago talking about, you know, the ministry said, let students bring phones to school, right? And I thought that was a dumb idea, right? It wasn't smart. You're going to open up like Pandora's box. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, but then I'm being like, you know, hypocritical. I'm like, no, you need to bring technology. You need to monitor it well. And the idea is just how we do it. And so the vision and the dream is within the next 5 years to bring this to the country, to every public school teacher, so that they are aware 24 hours is not a lot of time. And the benefits are immense. It takes a lot of weight off the shoulders of the teachers because the resources are there. It also takes a lot of expenses, right, for tuition centers away. So maybe tuition centers are not going to really like this.
They're not going to be happy with you at all, Raj. But thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us, man.
Same here. Thank you so much.
That was Raj Ridvan Singh, founder and CEO of Souls 24/7. You can find out more about what they do by visiting their Facebook page. And if you missed any part of this interview, download the podcast on our BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store and also on Google Play. You've been listening to Caroline O and Uma Pagan Ampike Pagan. This is The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.